Penguin Random House Audio presents What the Ermine Saw, The Extraordinary Journey of Leonardo da Vinci's Most Mysterious Portrait by Eden Collinsworth. Read for you by Cassandra Campbell. If history were taught in the form of stories, it would never be forgotten. Rudyard Kipling. Author's note. I am neither a historian nor an art expert, but have consulted a great many of both on the subject of this book. Only when no facts could be found did I engage in speculation. A question to begin. It was fortunate for Hans Frank that he wasn't expected to be an outward-facing example of Hitler's conceived master race, because he lacked what the Nazis considered desirable Nordic racial features. Instead, Frank sat behind a desk in an office. Frank sat behind office desk after office desk until he rose in rank from Hitler's personal lawyer to the critically important role of overseeing the expansion of Germany's territorial base after its invasion of Poland in 1939. His position afforded him a desk in a grand and ancient building in the Polish city of Krakow, and on the wall behind him hung a small painting. As Hitler's deputy, Frank worked diligently on several fronts. He implemented the deportation of Polish citizens to make way for German colonization. He enslaved what was left of the Poles, and he did what he could to eradicate the Jews, murdering at a furious pace while complaining that his hand ached from writing so many death warrants. Hans Frank supervised the wholesale extermination in death camps that would kill 20% of the Polish population. He fled at the end of World War II, and Allied forces tracked him to his Bavarian vacation home. Not far from where he stood, waiting to be arrested, was the small painting. Why would this coagulation of human evil, dead to shame but aware that he was facing his end, refused to part with the image of a beautiful girl holding a white ermine? Part 1. Soldiers of fortune, a cunning Italian duke, a remarkable young woman, and the rare genius connecting them. 1. Some 530 years ago, a young Italian woman, not much older than a girl, really, sat for her portrait. It was a customary practice in Europe to commission a noble woman's portrait in anticipation of marriage being a transactional event with political or monetary value. The setting was a sprawling, opulent Milanese castello, but the young woman's simply styled dress revealed that she was neither noble nor soon to be married. Instead of being depicted as something akin to an object, she would be well and truly the portrait's significant subject. In a time when her sex was expected to harbor unexpressed opinions, the young woman diverted herself during the long stretches of sitting for her portrait by enlisting a circle of learned men with whom to enjoy intellectual conversation. Often they would do this in Latin, a devilishly complicated language whose alphabet is derived from the Etruscan and Greek alphabets and features a nominative, a vocative, an accusative, a genitive, a dative, and an ablative. Some days the young woman would recite poetry to the men or orate long passages by memory. On other days, they would debate philosophical issues in respectfully low voices so as not to disturb the concentration of the painter, whose focus was forensically trained on the purpose at hand. The painter was not just an artist. Indeed, he eluded any number of categorizations. But if there were a central knot of his being, it was curiosity. His fascination with science often informed the methods of how he worked. By studying the anatomy of the human eye, he had gained an understanding of the relationship between light and the size of the pupil, noting that the pupil of the eye changes to as many different sizes as there are different degrees of brightness, and that in the evening when the weather is dull, what softness and delicacy you may perceive in the faces of men and women. To benefit from this discovery, he would sometimes paint during overcast days or the early evenings, when his enlarged pupils would have a sharper focus. He was in his early 30s and strikingly handsome, tall, lean, with auburn curls flowing past his shoulders and a neatly trimmed beard. He had a perfectly straight Grecian nose and deep-set, soulful eyes. There was a brio in his style of clothes, which were convention-flouting in the best possible way. While most of his male contemporaries wore long garments, he dressed in rakishly short tunics. As for his character, it was hard to read. He wasn't thought to be broody as much as self-absorbed. There was a meditative nature about him, and his facial expression often rested in the unsettling border between open and not, making a reading of his thoughts difficult. He appeared most content when left on his own with his notebooks. On the other hand, he could offer himself to conversation with disarming ease and infectious charm. The combination of these two traits enabled him to portray the interior life of the subjects he painted, while revealing very little of his own. The painter's way of working required time, and his refusal to be rushed with a commissioned work often frustrated his patron. But so admired was he, so unrivaled were his talents, that he was granted as much time as was required. That said, the young woman and her retinue thought it odd that as they passed his easel while filing out of his studio after each of the sittings, they could see that no brush strokes had been made on the wood panel where there was meant to be an emerging image. Unbeknownst to them, the painter had already conceived the portrait. In order to capture the fluidity of the young woman's grace before painting her, he had investigated the mechanics of how her head and shoulders would move as she turned. To illustrate his understanding, he drew 18 rapid compositional sketches of a model's head in a revolving sequence. Just as the painter took a systematic approach to his working methods, so too did he pay fastidious attention to its preparations. The wood panel on which he would paint the portrait was small, a mere 21 3/8 inches high and 15 1/2 inches wide. So that it would remain impenetrable to worms, he instructed his assistant to wash it thoroughly with a solution of brandy mixed with sulfurous arsenic and carbolic acid, to fill the panel's tiny holes and close any of its thin, vein-like cracks. It was covered with a thin paste of alabaster. The panel was sealed by applying a lacquer of cypress resin and mastic. Once the lacquer dried, a flat iron rasp was used to smooth away any remaining asperities. Only then did the assistant prime the wood panel with a layer of white gesso, a binder of sorts, mixed with a combination of chalk from bone and gypsum. This was the immaculate surface on which the painter made a preparatory drawing using charcoal powder. The drawing was meant to accomplish nothing more than outline a contoured likeness of the young woman. The rest, the remarkable, was still to come. It was not the assistant who had moved the panel onto an easel, but the painter, so that he could adjust it at his eye level. Under the easel was a centered table, reached easily from either direction. On the table were palettes and shallow cups of colors mixed with precisely calculated formulas. The formulas included certain minerals and seed oils judiciously selected. Nearby were paintbrushes. Some had a slight dusking of chalk on their tips applied the night before to prevent insect damage. The larger brushes were made of hog's bristles held together by a band of lead. The delicate ones were formed with squirrel hair and goose quill. A number of both kinds had been made with longer handles, whose utilitarian purpose was to provide enough distance between the panel and the painter, enabling him to view the entire image without stepping back from it. Accepting the commission to paint a portrait of the young woman would have obliged the artist to create a flattering impression of her. In this case, there would be no need to enhance reality. She was flawlessly beautiful. In a concession to one of the contemporary fashion trends at the time, gum arabic, a natural gum of the hardened sap from acacia trees imported from the East, smothered her long, shiny hair, which wrapped around her face.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?